Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the Belgian Football Podcast. My name is Scott Coyne, and I'll be your host for this episode. And joining me to dive deep into a real week of highs and lows in Belgian football is our very own resident Belgian and in-house Genki, Mr. Joris Beck. Joris, tell me, was your week full of highs or was it full of lows?
A bit of both. A bit of a manic depression, I guess. A bit of both, yes. All good. Except on the team front, obviously.
Yes, which we'll get to shortly. I thought we might start, Joris, with a real upper, a real high this week. We had the cup final on Thursday afternoon. For those watching this in the UK, very odd time to play a game like this, but we know people like to do things differently in Belgium and lots of things. So yeah, we had a sort of mid-afternoon kickoff on Thursday afternoon for that, which saw Union Saint-Gilloise win their first Croquet Cup, their first Belgian Cup in 110 years, Joris. That's a pretty long time to wait. And for a side that have been so good over the last 3 years, I have to say I was so happy for all of that, the playing staff and everyone at the club, because I felt they really deserved that, aside from the fact they completely dominated this game. Pretty miserable it was for the most part for Antwerp. They had a better second half, but really struggled to create anything. And a happy couple of days for the yellow half of Brussels.
Yes, well, also a bit of a downer in the same time, I guess, because yes, the game itself was not the highest of quality. It was a deserved win, obviously, that yes, but it was not either team's best performance, which happens often in finals, of course. So it's, I guess, nobody really expected it. Also, well, I'm not sure. I might be already throwing the stat here then, but like Antwerp are the only team that Union have beaten in the past 2 months, I believe, as well. So that's that's more running ahead of ourselves a little bit towards the competition games there as well, the league games as well. But yeah, congratulations to Union. Really great to be in there to upgrade your European ticket, and well, it might not be the last upgrade of their European ticket will have, although the chances are getting slim for that while I'm saying that as well. But yeah, congratulations. And like also, I have to check, there's something is like that they could get even upgraded, I think, if Dortmund win the Champions League as well. So that's even more good news if that would happen, of course, in their final.
Yeah, so many moving pieces on this, actually, on the European places. So kind of keep an eye on our feed and we'll keep you up to date with all the news on that. What I want to know from you, Joris, is did you have Koki Makeda down to score the winning goal? Because I didn't.
Well, it was his second goal in the Cup campaign, which is more than his league campaign. So that's... But no, no, I did not. But of course, on a corner, everything can happen and yeah, central defender can score.
Of course, he scored as well again this weekend. So, you know, he's had a very, very good week by his standards. But yeah, congratulations to Union Saint-Gilloise, first Belgian Cup in 110 years. And I really enjoyed seeing some of the social media coverage of that kind of coming out of Brussels over the 24 hours after the game. There was some really nice fan interaction and parties going on. And I did actually speak to a couple of very senior members of staff inside the club in the aftermath as well. Who obviously had a very good time, judging by how long it took them to reply to my correspondence, which I was expecting. Speaking of highs, let's move on to another one. Playoff one, where the stakes are definitely rising. In terms of the scores there this weekend, Anderlecht beat your boys Genk 2-1. To ratchet up their chances of their first title in 7 years. We'll get to that in a second. Antwerp's bad week went from bad to worse, arguably. They lost 2-1 at home to Cercle Bruges. And in the big game of the weekend, the big pulsating game, which seems to produce cracking games these days, we were at one not too long ago. Club Brugge drawing 2-2 with Union at the Jan Breidel on Monday evening. So shall we start with Anderlecht and Genk, Joris? Because a lot of news.
Short pain.
I thought I'd get your pain out of the way first. You know, it'll ease the rest of the show in for you. Yeah, a lot of news kind of coming out of both clubs, really. It was a game in which, I suppose, individual moments decided it again. A real bit of quality from Yari Vercharen. I mean, such gorgeous weight on the lift of that ball. Really, really beautiful goal. Just technical brilliance. I thought, you know, before you tell us a little bit more about the Genk camp, I thought Arokodari had a pretty decent game on the whole. And the big takeaway from this is we now know that Anderlecht can win the title this weekend for the first time in 7 years, if they beat their old nemesis Club Brugge and Union fail to beat Cercle. That's where we're at. Don't worry, Club Brugge fans. I know, and it is worth pointing out, that you can also win the title if you beat Anderlecht and win on the final weekend as well. So that's going to be a hell of a game coming up this weekend in Brussels, Joris. But lots to talk about from a Genk perspective, because did they deserve something out of this game, do you think?
Yeah, maybe a draw would have been possible, but it was a bit the same issue as before, and I felt so the efficiency was not there, and I also felt Anderlecht actually in the first half their press was quite well. Genk was dominating the ball position, but Anderlecht's press was quite well, and they basically by their press pushed Genk backwards and forced them to play the ball backwards instead of forwards, keeping them away from their goal. So in that sense, I think that went well. Yeah, their opening goal came a bit out of nowhere. And yeah, okay, I beat both goals. They're both brilliant goals. The finishing is great. But I think in both occasions, 4 or 5 Genk defenders, or players, because you can't call them defenders, none of them, unfortunately, even if some of them are defenders, were around there, and they couldn't block the shots or they didn't do enough. I felt so defensively it was still shambles. Anderlecht was really trying to exploit the space behind mainly McKenzie in this defense, and did quite well. I think no goal actually came from that in the end, but yeah, still they created a few dangerous moments and chances out of that. McKenzie is just having, unfortunately, not the best few last weeks. I hope he can kick it up a notch for the final two games. Well, we'll see if I hope for that after next week as well, because that could still, there's still some riding on all of the games, so I might not hope for that by next week. But the final 15 minutes or so, that's funny how it goes sometimes. I guess Anderlecht against Cercle Brugge last week, or was it 2 weeks ago, had it as well. And then now Genk had it against Anderlecht. Well, we also saw in another game we will talk about soon how things changed, the whole complexity of the game changed. Because after 2-0, it also felt like it was over. I also said already, fear like this will be a drag of the end of the playoffs, which still could be the case, of course. But then the 2-1 also came a bit out of nowhere, and then Genk were pushing and just they were not creating enough, but they were really forcing Anderlecht back in a manner that Anderlecht had not even done throughout the whole game. So that really got still exciting, and like the 2-2 was closer than a 3-1, while before the 2-1, I would have never thought that. I would have thought even maybe 3-4-0 could happen. Also, taking into consideration what happened earlier in the week, of course. We were talking about it last week already. And Franke, I thought he would leave. Well, I more or less knew he would leave by the end of the season, but I did not expect him to leave, by the end of the season.
You're giving me the perfect segue into what I was going to ask you about next. We now know that Wouter Franken has left Genk in between our conversations last week. It happened a few days ago. We expect him to be confirmed as the new T1 with the Buffaloes at Ghent. Probably over the next week, we'll wait till the season's done. Possibly the European playoff that Ghent obviously still have to play as well. They may want to hold fire until that's done. So it'll be interesting to see the timing of when this is confirmed, because Big Hein, obviously it was confirmed today that he would be leaving, something else we've known for months actually. It was confirmed today by the club that he will be leaving, and he was a very frustrated figure this week at his press conferences. Joris Big Hein, he was asked incessantly about Franken, and he said he was speaking about how annoying it was because he can't talk about games still to be played and other things going on at the club. It's a distraction which doesn't help. And of course, as we know, they lost this weekend as well, which Hein said somewhat amusingly afterwards. I thought he said, well, maybe it's just as well because of everything else that was going on. He's had a difficult week. Yeah, I mean, the situation with Franken obviously escalated very quickly. It's worth pointing out for those who don't necessarily know the detail that Franken himself made the decision to jump. The club were saying up until very recently that they were open to continuing conversations about, you know, whether they might stay together next season. But Franken, I think, had already decided that the relationship wasn't what he wanted it to be, particularly with the board and the sporting director. So he was the one ultimately who made the decision. And I think the club wisely, as soon as that was obvious to them, felt, well, you know, it has to happen now. So it's not, this reminds me a little bit of the Ronnie Dyla situation. It's not quite the same, but a situation where a manager leaves in not ideal circumstances. And, you know, it creates uncertainty and, you know, less unpleasantness than in the Dyla situation, but it probably could have been handled a little bit better, couldn't it?
Yeah, I feel like, okay, now I'm only following the party line, so that's the only side of the story we know. But like that, apparently he would have said it before the games against Club Brugge. After, well, while Genk in that, well, it sounds really far away now, but like when Genk actually were close to being inside the shout, far away still, but shout for the title as well. Yeah, and after that they haven't gotten any points anymore as well. So yeah, that's, it might not have to do with it, but okay, I guess it anyway influences the playing squad regardless. Okay, I guess officially maybe he would not have said that, but trickle down towards the playing squad inevitably, I guess. So although I mean, can't really blame the mentality for most part of the games, for those games. Also, mentality is always difficult to judge from on screen, but yeah. Weird timing definitely could have been handled a lot better, probably from both sides, but so far we don't know the real spicy details yet, but maybe there are none. I guess we don't know a lot of the story, and it's just striking is a little bit that is to hint as well, though, like, since, yeah, I can get there were tensions between, well, that was obvious, there were tensions between the coaching staff, or at least Franken himself, and the board regarding to expectations and certain players, not getting certain players, or maybe getting some other players that you did not really want as a coaching staff. While at Gent, they also just, yeah, and the main thing is, of course, that was, in this case, probably still the striker position. While at Gent, they just sold their three main strikers in the winter, of course. So that's two of the three main strikers and another attacking talent. And that was already, okay, I know Gent is going to sail a different course and it's starting a new project and so on. But, well, this was already under that new ownership. Maybe there with the necessities coming still from the old ownership. But, still. Feels a bit weird. Feels like a step sideways, but okay, who are we to judge? But that's more a part that I'm also interested in.
Yeah, it's an interesting way of putting that, whether it's a sidestep, because it does seem like Rankin and Ghent are quite a good fit, but it seems like that for the same reasons that Rankin was quite a good fit at your side, Genk as well. You know, they are the same reasons. And sometimes I think when you know that your relationship with the board is perhaps not repairable, you know, you're not going to reach an agreement on a position, then psychologically, I think sometimes you make the decision that it's perhaps best I exit for my own benefit as well. While we're on the subject of musical chairs and T1s, do you have a personal preference for who you would like to see come in? Because there are some names that have been bandied about, but who would you appoint?
I have really not given it any thought much, not much thought. I have no real favorite, but I guess if we stay inside the Belgian league, probably Fink might be a good fit, given his, also considering not only the results, which have been good, but also working with youngsters and making them better. That might be a good fit. Of course, we can't disregard Muzlic. What he's doing at Cercle is really amazing. I don't know if that style would be a fit, but also we don't know if maybe that style would be slightly different with different player material. That's something that lies in the future. If he ever leaves at Cercle, which most likely is going to happen, when is another question still. But that are two names that spring to mind for me. But not one I will really back 100%. I really want this one, but
We'll see what happens on that one. There'll be movement on that probably quicker than we think, as there always is in Belgium. Let's move on to the next playoff one game this weekend, which is full of uppers and downers, depending on which side you support and who your sympathies are perhaps with. The Bossel Stadion, Antwerp's bad week, as I was saying, went from bad to worse, losing 2-1 at home to Miron Muzlic's Cercle. And actually, that was Cercle's first win over Antwerp, I think, Joris, in 4 years, but their first win at the Bossel in the top flight since 1995, which is a pretty wild stat in its own right. Kevin Denke, of course, who's been the main man for Cercle all season, getting his 27th of the season, coming courtesy of hoping the ground opens up and swallows you moment for poor Yella Batai. Really, really, really horrible. But Big Kev, of course, winning the Ebony Shoe last night as well, which, of course, is the award that goes to the best player of African origin in Belgian football every year. 27 goals in 36 games. Really well deserved. You know, there's going to be lots of clubs interested in Kevin Denke's signature over the next few weeks. There's no doubt about that. But also, I thought that Le Martial was brilliant again this week. Lopez and Summers, all really strong. And Cercle are odds-on favourites probably at the moment to grab that European playoff spot against Ghent. To be fair to Antwerp, although they have had a really miserable week, shout out from me anyway for Alhazan Youssef. I thought he was decent this week. Maybe one of the few positive takeaways from Antwerp, a club a bit like Ghent who are about to pivot their sporting position and to go on a new path, Joris.
Yeah, I'll have to correct you first. Like, Cercle are on course for a straight ticket for European football because Union won. It's the fifth place team that would have to face Ghent, as we know now already. Still, I didn't end up to be Cercle. There's two game days to see, but I think you meant the position they're in at the moment. So
I said it was fast moving. It's been fast moving since I spoke.
yes, exactly. But yeah, that's I knew I hadn't written down this time, but I knew it was a long time since Cercle Brugge had won against Antwerp in general. But I didn't know it was that long since they won at the Bosel even. But yeah, who isn't winning at the Bosel? Like, the Antwerp have lost all their four home games against the playoffs so far as well. Contrary to, I also want to circle back quickly to a previous game. Well, we make these connections with these games anyway a little bit more, I guess. But Anderlecht have won all their home games so far. And I thought about that a few weeks ago as well. Like, if they would do that, it might be enough. It still could be true. I think still they probably will know. Well, it could be. Yeah, it might be. And we'll know on they will know before the game even next week if it would even be enough. They better win it, of course. It's probably the most difficult one as well against Gluebrugge. But okay, I'm... We were on Antwerp Cercle Brugge. Yeah, deserved win from what I saw from Cercle. Really good finishes from both Le Maréchal and Denke. Antwerp. Yeah, they really are having a poor end of the season. Also with a lot of financial stories around the club as well, and doubts about the manager. There will also be a new manager there and a lot of players leaving. I saw some funny comments. I don't remember where it was, so I'm sorry if I'm not giving someone credit here, but a manager linked to the position of Van Bommel is Alex Pastoor, which means pastor, of course. And that would be a good fit with one of the players that is still going to be there and actually scored this weekend as well, which is called, Kerk, which means church in Dutch. So, yeah, that would be a good fit, definitely, but in that sense. jokes aside, there's actually no clarity on that. It's only a rumor that he might be sort of the current Almere City manager. Well, it's known that he will leave Almere, but whether that will be to Antwerp or that he takes a break or goes to any other club. No, that's not announced yet. But deserved win for Cercle. They are really in pole position for fourth spot and putting Antwerp down as well. I think they can't be caught by Antwerp anymore, even so. Antwerp is only fight for fifth position, so that playoff spot against Gent. And the interesting game coming up, of course, is Genk Antwerp between the two sides that are currently fighting for that. Genk might still be they could still overtake Cercle, but if Antwerp win in Genk, they also come within touching distance before the final match day of Genk for that fifth spot. But they really need to win, otherwise they are bottom in the playoffs even before the last game plays, and that would be a game, the home game against Anderlecht actually as well, so might be interesting for multiple reasons still. That's what the playoffs do with you and with the league.
They keep you on your toes, don't they? Yeah, I think there's going to be huge change at Antwerp, like with a lot of clubs this summer. You know, they're moving to a model, a footballing model, that's probably closer to the one, or certainly the model they should arguably always have gone for, and that is prioritising the development of the academy and bringing through players that accrue sell-on value, much more of a self-sustainable model. The days of spend are definitely over for the club. It's going to take some time to turn that ship.
I also saw some rumors linking them to Cheron Chéri, a 35-year-old player from NEC as well. That's interesting to feed in all of that story, but they're okay. That's just a rumor, I guess. It has been published, but we don't know how credible these sources were. Also, you might still need some experience, of course.
And of course, the new manager coming in, whoever that's going to be, doesn't necessarily know who they're going to be working with, because there's a good chance a lot of these players that are there now won't be there. And, you know, if some of the rumours and some of the chatter is to be believed, then there is a potential fire sale on the cards at Antwerp. You know, everybody is open to offers in order to finance a number of things going forward. Talk as well this week, Joris, I noticed about the new Tribune 2 being built potentially during next season, and they're hoping, and this is probably a bit optimistic, but they're saying it's possible that they could have it ready for sort of this time next season, the playoffs next season. That's a bit optimistic, I think, considering some of the issues still to get round, but we'll see whether they can do that.
Yeah, personally, I feel like it's a bit of a smoke. Well, it was a bit of a trying to get a smoke screen, like a positive story out to the press as well, and to lull the fans a little bit before. Now more and more other things are more negative things seem to be coming out again. But
yeah,
we'll see. It's a personal feeling. Maybe that's not correct, of course.
Yeah, I think you're right. It was an interesting fact to throw into the mix. So there might be something in that. On a more serious note, though, I think the where it becomes important for them is because obviously with them spending less, they want to try and increase their revenues elsewhere, and that's one of the best ways to do it. You know, to pack another few thousand fans in is certainly gonna help a lot. So you can see why that is important to them. They'll be wanting to just, you know, forget about this week. I think it's been a really disappointing end to the season for them, but they've still got something to play for, which is important because of those ever changing European spots, as we were just saying. The final big playoff one game this weekend was played last night, as of recording, at the Jan Bridal Club, drawing 2-2 with Union. An absolutely pulsating game this. Had everything, as this particular fixture seems to have regularly now, as we were saying. I thought in a Club Bruges sense, I thought De Kuyper and Skov Olsen were brilliant. Actual real quality, really good performances. I thought Puertas had a genuinely really good game, despite moments that kind of, you know, left you a little bit frustrated with him. Obviously, Enoch Teklab had that fantastic goal, real cracker. Rasmussen was decent, and that whole Union midfield, Puertas, Van Oot and Rasmussen, was generally really strong, which was always going to have to be coming into this game, because Union knew that if they lost, that was them essentially knocked out of the title. And although it's still possible for them, interestingly, Alexander Blessing choosing his words very carefully after this and just changing the tone a little bit.
Yeah, it still feels a bit like that, despite getting that draw, that they lost it. The chance to win the title. It's not completely over yet, of course, but yeah, they really need to win their next two games, which is possible. But even then, some results need to go their way, for sure. So that would mean I think they would be happy with a draw as well over the weekend. That increases the chances a little bit, although it depends. I think in that scenario, they need to hope that both sides lose points again on the final day. And if one of the other, if Club or Anderlecht wins, the team that won must lose. Then they only have to look at one other team. But yeah, you can already hear there was a few, all games will have to come into play and fall into their right place for Union to still grab the title, which is possible. Our last season, it almost happened as well. And ultimately for the title-winning team, it did on that final day, everything felt completely right in the end. But yeah, I felt generally Club Brugge were really strong and deserved to win until, again, that these final 15 minutes were... That's what happens, of course. We did not expect... The 3-1 looked closer than the 2-2. But then the 2-2 fell out of nowhere. Well, I would call it a Mignolet mistake, though, and it could be a costly one as well for the 2-2. He was in no man's land on that quarter where Machida again scored, well, with a bit of luck as well. I think it was from off the back of Odoi as well on the way towards the goal. But
he loves a corner these days, Koke. He loves a corner. Flick on from the corner.
He definitely does. And unlike Hink, two days before, they Union really created a few really decent chances, or really good chances, that they probably could have done better. In between, Skov Olsen had probably the best chance to kill the game, though, as well, where Maurice had a save. So I have to give credit to Maurice as well on that one. After all, they have been beaten by Skov Olsen twice, unfortunately. Yeah, Union's defending on both goals was, unfortunately, also really off. much like King's defending, opening up. Well, especially the first one, really opening up with one pass. Maybe they wanted to try an offside trap, but that did completely not work, even by two players, I think. What else is there to say about Teklab's goal? Indeed, what a way to score your first. But he was then indeed one of those players missing a really, really big chance, maybe even still bigger than Skov Olsen's one, now I come to think of it. A rebound from a shot from of Nielsen that hit a post, which already on its own was a good chance. from an outside position. But yeah, then he did not convert that one. It was not the easiest one to convert. He did manage to put it goal bound, but yeah, it was clear there were a few more bodies that maybe could have done it a bit in a more composed way than maybe the whole story of the game could have been differently as well. And the 2-2, and I think that second half probably is that during that second half I really was thinking, yes, this is what the playoffs about. Like, what can you have against this? I know, let's not go. I know there are different opinions on this, but specifically during this half, I was like, yes, you really do not get this kind of things. Yeah, and such end-to-end game, fast pace, could really go both ways, and like, yeah, cracking goals as well in between, sloppy defending, some bad goalkeeping, good goalkeeping, everything, balls in the post, everything was in there. But maybe something that could be more crucial than we currently think as well for Club Brugge's side then is, well, okay, there's 2 points. Of course, one, if they would have won, they would be in pole position. Now they lost first place to Anderlecht based on the regular season endings. Also the second thing, of course, the unfortunate collision between Nusa and Thiago, which ended up giving Thiago a medial ligament injury. Anyway, he will not feature anymore. It could have been worse. It's not an ACL. It's not going to be out for 6 to 8 or 9 months, but still a few months. He won't be playing anymore in the playoffs, and that could hamper their chances now as well. And just a little bit of irony. I'm not laughing at it. That would be really cruel with injuries, but just, that it is a bit irony, though, that it's Nusa precisely Nusa, the other Brentford target that hits the player that ultimately goes there for a big sum of money. And luckily it's not as bad, so that his chances at Brentford won't be too much hampered. But for his ending at Club Brugge as well, it is a bit. And yeah, it has to be said, he's been really giving it. He has been giving it his all, despite the transfer being already official. And that doesn't always happen. I guess you could also easily tune out and already think, okay, I'll save, don't take any risks, and be ready for next season with my new club in a bigger league. But he was not like that, even though he went through a tough spell with scoring. That also had ended. He will be missed for that Club Brugge side, and we'll see if it really will be a factor in the title race as well.
Yeah, football's so funny and strange and cruel sometimes like that. It was just, the circumstances of that and the involved parties, like you're saying, just, kind of really, really quite eerie, to be honest. I was talking earlier about the significance of the situation that Anderlecht are in, potentially being able to win the title for the first time in 7 years this coming weekend. Again, worth reminding everybody, if Club Brugge go to Brussels and Lotto Park this weekend and beat Anderlecht, then, it's all very much in their hands as well. So that game, which is already spicy enough at the best of times, and on a regular fixture, there is a huge amount riding on this particular one this weekend for both these sides. And that's going to be the one to watch if you can only see one game this weekend. Dropping down to playoff two, Joris, one of the games didn't even happen this weekend. And we did get forewarning that this might be the case in the lead up to Standard and Westerlo, which was abandoned because Standard Ultras wouldn't leave the playing staff, leave the academy and the team coach, so the game couldn't happen in the end. And those poor supporters who did manage to get into Sklessen hoping that the game would go ahead had to be told by the stadium announcer, nope, it's not happening. Match abandoned, and that will almost certainly now be forfeited in Westerlo's favour. And a really difficult time for Standard Liège, just kind of getting a little bit worse with that one. We didn't think, funnily enough, that it would be too much to discuss about this particular game, and in the end, the game itself never happened, so it was taken even out of our hands.
Yes, but probably still the game that out of these playoffs that we should talk most about, ironically again. But did so many things in here as well. Again, like, yes, the whole country knew that they would not play. So I still also feel like it's not completely only the fans. And the club knew one day in advance, at least, I think, as well. So, yeah, that's also already another reason why there is a slight chance it would not be a forfeit. But because of this factor, even though, of course, it's nothing official and all, and maybe needs to be proven. But, it does not play in the cards of not having a forfeit. Also, it will end up with having another fine, and they already have financial issues, of course. That does not help. What else is there to discuss? But yeah, there's talks about the fans doing this for the remaining two games again as well. And if they do, then Standard will forfeit the whole season. And wait for what the consequences are of that, because I do believe if that would still happen, then all points gained against them and dropped, or well, they're just scrapped. So that, yeah, don't want to imagine the implications on the very tight title race on that, for example. But to name one thing, that's the most obvious one. But what else? Yeah. Also, a remarkable first game in the first division for referee Marco Simonini, who still has to wait for his actual first game, although he got some action. I guess he did have to follow the protocol there, but apart from following that, no yellow cards, flawless performance, best referee we've had this season, I think, across all whole league. But yeah, and also a little bit of the funny images with the Westerlo players and stuff being there. Well, also a bit sad for them, of course, that they had to the whole trip to Standard to Liège for that. But while it was already quite clear even when they left, I guess that this game would not really go through. But also they did not have the official match balls either, because also that was all blocked and so on. So they really had to find in some kind of cabinets, old cabinets, they found some old balls so that they could at least do their warm-up just in case this game would eventually go through. But that were some funny images. That's the only funny thing about the situation, I guess, though, because, yeah, that's... yeah, all the ramifications. So if I didn't go into that. So if Standard would indeed forfeit three times, so I personally don't think it will happen. But if that would happen, then yeah, there might be some ramifications for their existence in the first division and or because I think there are also some clauses in the regulations about the second team that actually did the ramifications could be for SLCS, who already have been relegated, but they might have to go to another one because of that and so on. I don't really know the complete details there, but it could be that even if that happens, the punishment would be harder for the under 23 side than for the senior squad, as they have this in the pro league, and that's some weird kind of thing apparently. But okay, don't pin me down. Don't pin me down on that. I don't really want to find out.
What we do know is that current owners 777 are now trying actively to sell the club, and people are frantically opening drawers, picking up phones, emailing friends. You know what I mean, to see who's got any money and to see what's possible, kind of quickly, because the situation isn't good, and that's changing pretty much day to day at Standard. On Westerlo, we do now know, it's not been confirmed yet, it probably will be tomorrow or certainly over the next 48 hours, that Timmy Simons, who of course was responsible for bringing Dender back up to the Pro League, has now left Dender and will be unveiled as the new T1 at Westerlo shortly. That's been done apparently, so we're just waiting for confirmation from the club, which will probably come before we gather to discuss this weekend's action. So we should have more on that for you next week, everybody. Meanwhile, at the KA Ghent Arena, Hein van Heijsenbroek was having a very frustrating evening as his Ghent side lost 1-0 to Leuven. A Leuven side who love playoffs, Joris. That's their fourth win in eight games. They've only lost only lost two of their playoff games so far. It's amazing what happens when the pressure's off. Quite incredible, really. Youssef Maziz's good form continues. And they managed to dig in and get the win after that early goal.
Yeah, indeed. Also, well, not that much to say about this game, I guess, because, these playoffs are done and dusted. Regardless, it's still been a long while since Gent have lost at home and especially haven't scored at home either. Again, I did not find the time this week, unfortunately, I have to be honest here, but to look up precisely how long ago it's been. But I can assume the home loss, probably not that, might still have been this season. But the not scoring at home, that will really have been a few years back, I would presume. Not that much to say about this game. I guess the main news was indeed Franke most likely coming, all but done, and Van Hazenbroek leaving at Gent. And this can't be too good for their confidence in theory, I guess, just the stats being ruined. But, well, it all doesn't matter either.
that's another way of looking at it. Absolutely, yeah. On the subject, kind of on Ghent and Big Hein, the club did publish quite a nice open letter that Hein had wrote on confirmation of his departure at the end of the season today, where he thanked lots of people at the club, including the ground staff, for giving him a great surface for the players to play on, which I actually thought was really nice. You don't often see kind of departures handled in that way from the departing coach's point of view. I did actually like that quite a lot. But much like Antwerp, they do still have something to play for, and obviously I think that was one of the sources of his frustration this week when he said the whole situation with Rankin was really annoying because it distracted from the business of, getting Europe done in a way that he would like to do before he signs off. There was one other game in playoff two this weekend. Not too much to say about this game really either. St. Truiden beating Mechelen 2-1. St. Truiden's fourth win over Mechelen this season. A real bogey team for Mechelen, St. Truiden, Adriano Berticini banging another couple of goals, having an excellent game, a player who's going to be really big for them next season, I think. As we know, Abubakari Koita having a pretty strong game again. And one of the things I took away from this game, Joris, was comments that Rob Skoofs made afterwards. We know Besnik Hazi's leaving. Another coaching change coming up inside another club. Rob Skoofs saying afterwards that he really hopes that the club give the players clarity on who the new T1 is going to be really soon, because, as he said, there's a lot to be done.
Yes, there definitely is, but okay. We knew that. We've talked about that at length, yeah. I think, over the past couple of weeks as well. On Bertaccini, well, good that he finds his goal-scoring form. He will have to really confirm that, of course, next season in games that actually matter. Because again, unfortunately, it's better to have those games, but it doesn't necessarily say anything about how it goes in really, really competitive games next season. But you can only have them under your belt and these goals. And he most likely will feature a lot in their side as well, if Esting stands. As their strikers have not really been informed throughout the rest of the season. I guess we can move on from this one quickly this time.
Playoff 2 feels like there's not been much to say about it for kind of a long time, but sometimes Playoff 2 is kind of like that. Let's drop down, shall we? Let's drop down to Playoff 3, and Playoff 3 saw the ultimate downer for one side this weekend. Open managing to beat Molenbeek 2-0. That was the Pandas' first win in eight. They were relegated last weekend, obviously. That was confirmed. They were already gone. But this win, this defeat of Molenbeek confirms that Molenbeek are now gone. They will join Erpen in the Challenger Pro League next season. And Molenbeek kind of have gone from thinking that perhaps they'd saved themselves to it not quite happening for them at all, really. And Yannick Ferreira this week with some quite interesting comments, I thought, Joris. He was talking about, obviously, the disappointment of being relegated, but he was alluding to the fact that he felt that perhaps they had done enough, that they'd turned a corner with those two wins, that they were on the right course, but he realised, and this was the bit that I really kind of found interesting, what he didn't realise was that the extent of the mentality issues and effectively the mental state of the general playing squad was so poor for a variety of reasons he didn't go into. We could probably do a separate podcast on all of that, that he almost felt it was insurmountable in the end, almost admitting that this, he felt this was going to happen, which was really interesting. But I thought his team selection this weekend, although he's chopped and changed a bit, we didn't see any Messi or Magda gain until the second half in the game when they were chasing things. Big players who can create things for you and score goals, obviously. So I would have thought in this situation you would really need them and want to start them. That was slightly strange for me. But then also Uber being at fault as well with at least one of the goals. And that's a really interesting one because Yannick Ferreira, one of his big calls when he came in was to bring in Huber, wasn't it? And of course, he's been at fault in the game that ultimately seen them go down. Not entirely his fault, of course, but that decision's come back to kind of haunt him a little bit. But yeah, a painful week for Molenbeek going down. And that's another club in which, you know, there's a degree of chaos around at the moment, you could say.
Yes, and also, well, it's even more painful, of course, knowing that if they would have won against a team that was already relegated, then they would not be down yet, at least. Maybe it would still have happened, but they would at least have the correct spot in that playoff. And yeah, now it's a really sad ending of their season. But yeah, that it was very typical, I guess, indeed, that a typical way of, to go down and concede goals in your final game. With indeed the goalkeeper Hubert, especially then with team being one of those choices, as you already told, of Ferreira in goal. And then, yeah, a very clumsy own goal. I don't think Hubert has much to do about that, but well, outside of potentially communication, but I don't think there was, like, that thing, the tackle was already going anyway. On a cross that was going, well, probably very slowly, even going towards his hands normally, but if it wasn't for the defender sliding in and just tucking it in. But yeah, and that's curtains for them, and they have interesting times ahead for as well. Just yeah, we'll see how they fare. For Eupel, on the other hand, I guess good to finish the season at least with a first win in these playoffs and having a clean sheet for a home crowd, even though there were not that many people, as you would expect, since there was not much riding on this game for them anymore. The only thing is also, of course, here, what if that foul that was just outside the box was initially put as a penalty, that's one of the what-if moments for Molenbeek now. But okay, I guess over the course of the whole season, many teams have a lot of what-if moments, but you can't pin it down to one. But that's definitely one that will stick a little bit in the minds currently still, maybe. It was very narrowly outside and overturned by VAR. And if that would have been a penalty and a goal, I think it would have been an equalizer or maybe even the lead for them. Yeah, who knows what would have happened. But yeah, all in all, I guess two... relegations that were, I think, deserved is maybe the not the right word here, but like did not, yeah, I think indeed two teams go down as that deserved to go down, I guess, in comparison to the other squads. And that's a sad ending for both of them in league. Yeah, for Molenbeek is straight going down, of course. For Eupen, it's been 8 years in the league, their longest spell in the league. ever. I think they now are total 9 or maybe 10. I don't remember if they immediately went down the first time. But definitely we'll have to see, because yeah, both sides, there's some ownership issues and like with many teams in Challenger Pro League or in Belgium in general, even. Well, interesting times ahead.
Yeah, there was, of course, one other game in playoff three, and that was the game that Charleroi won 3-1 against Kortrijk. Kortrijk, of course, the other side who could have gone down but didn't, courtesy of the way things panned out at the weekend. Kortrijk not playing very well, really, at all this weekend, not responding positively to the nerves and tension around the situation. Charleroi being very professional, getting the job done. And Charleroi have actually had, Joris, a really good playoffs. They've won 5 out of their 6 games, undefeated, getting the job done really early with those 2 early wins as well, to secure things. And somewhat amusingly this weekend, this win did make me smile, because I coming into this game, Kortrijk's T1 Fair Alexanderson saying it's going to be really interesting to see what Charleroi side starts this game for the first 15 or 20 minutes. And it was a side that absolutely wanted to win the game and were completely on it. And that was important, particularly in light of the fact that Charleroi's T1 now is Rick de Mel. And Rick obviously had that scenario a number of months ago where, you know, his integrity and certain coaching decisions were called into question while he was still at Westerlo. So the last thing Rick needed was another match in which his side, you know, looked to not play the game or not be that bothered. So I'm sure his message pre-match was, go out there and for God's sake, win this game.
Probably. And ultimately, it had the same result because both sides did not have any consequences out of it. Actually, not that much to say about this game again as well, except Coffey going off both injured and also getting a final a round of applause by the audience. And the same goes for Eli and Mahidra, who both players will be leaving the club at the end of the season. And they got a final round of applause throughout the game. So Coffey getting off, Eli and Mahidra actually getting a few minutes at the end. It was not Eli Metri going into goal for Coffey. No, don't get me wrong, but that would have been even further, and then maybe then things would have been a bit more put in question into question again. But what else? Hermans had a good game with a goal and one assist, one and a half or two assists even. And on Kortrijk, in this game it doesn't matter, but they have not turned around any game throughout the whole season to win it after going behind. Could prove crucial in the upcoming fixtures in this do or die games that they have against Lommel, as we can already prelude now.
Yeah, well, we might as well get to that. You know, we're getting so good at this that we're giving each other the segues now. Dropping down to the Challenger Pro League, which this weekend saw the Challenger Pro League playoff final reach its conclusion. Lommel and Denza. Lommel came out 3-2 winners in the end, Joris. Goals in this game in the 2-1 win coming from Diego Rosa and Juho Talvite. Lommel, for me, completely deserving to win the playoff final over the two legs. Generally the better side in most areas. Denza, I think, hugely disappointed, understandably. But having said that, I never really felt they played on the front foot and tried to take the initiative in either game. They played their best football over the two legs when they went behind and when they were effectively chasing the game. Lommel much the stronger from the most part, certainly on the basis of the chances they created as well. And as we now know, as you were saying there, they have guaranteed their place in the barrage match, the playoff of playoffs, which will be between Lommel and Kortrijk. Kortrijk obviously finishing second top of the relegation playoff. So two legs coming up, home and away, for both sides to see who the final Pro League club will be next season. And I think this playoff game is going to be quite tightly contested, as these games always are, as you would expect. The thing for me about Kortrijk, Joris, in thinking about this, is they do not score a lot of goals. They've been averaging less than a goal a game this season. And as you were saying there, I think whoever scores first in this tie is definitely going to have a bigger advantage than most. But because of the nature of the game, you know, it's much like a cup final, as we were talking about at the start. You know, your form coming into the game in lots of ways doesn't really matter. Freyr Alexandersen saying that he's been watching a lot of both Lobel and Denza in the run-up to this being decided. So he's already been doing a lot of homework and was assuring everybody that they will be ready and kind of planning ahead. Lommel equally, though, have a lot of reasons to feel optimistic coming into this.
Yeah. They do. I think indeed they deserve to win the fixture against Denza. Although what a goal it would have been from! I think it was Ben's favorite Suleiman on from an attempt from was it around the halfway line?
Yeah. I thought it was going in. I thought he'd done it. I really did.
Well, it was not down to his shooting, but the great reflex from the local goalkeeper. Kept it out in the end, and in a good way even, like, because you also often see keepers stumbling when it's indeed going the right direction, that he managed to avoid that. Kortrijk and Lommel, it's really a tight fixture. I would think indeed maybe mainly because of Kortrijk issues to score still. Although that has gotten a little bit better over the past couple of months since Alexandersson got in. But regardless of that, they've been better defending. But I think the same can be said. The opposite can be said for Lommel. That they might be better up front, but at the back they might be sometimes leaking. So really even tie. Just on that, I guess I've always said I expected the team that comes out of the relegation playoffs to be the favorites for this fixture. I still will put my money, if I really have to, on Kortrijk. But it could be more even than I've been alluding to before. And on Lommel, it's also interesting that the run of fixtures they had, or the playoff fixtures they had, they're all following the River Leie, beating Zulte Waregem in the first round, now against Denza, and now a bit further still to Kortrijk. Yeah, it's also noteworthy that they're from inside of Flanders, quite far away from each other as well. So at least there will be a lot of traveling going on on those days.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting, and the first of the two legs comes up this weekend, so we'll definitely have the halftime report on that game for you all on next week's BFP. Lommel coming into this game obviously in a lot of confidence as well. Joris, arguably more confidence than Kortrijk, because Lommel have been on a, you know, certainly more of a winning streak, that's for sure. But one thing to watch out for, I do wonder, is the physicality. We know how physical Belgian football is generally at lots of levels, but I think Kortrijk will be slightly better attuned, I suspect, to the potential physicality required to be stamped on in a game like this. So it'll be interesting to see how both sides adjust to that, because I know in recent years, in recent playoff finals like this, the Challenger Pro League side has been bullied a little bit physically as a way of dealing with that. So that's something to kind of watch out for, particularly with that Kortrijk defence arguably being a little bit better. But yeah, a fascinating encounter set up there. Well, I think that's just about it for this week, Joris. We've covered a really exciting week. Lots of ups and downs, as I was saying at the start. We're now going to go out in a downer, because that's the end of this episode. But, you know, you can give yourself another upper by listening to it all again if you want, or telling a friend about it. So, you know, make of that what you will. If you like what we do here at the BFP, and we know a lot of you do, then please feel free to leave us a little review on your podcast platform of choice. Equally, we do have a Buy Me a Coffee, so if you'd like to leave us a little donation that helps us do lots of things here, then please feel free to do that. You can find the link on our social media. And likewise, if you want to drop us any listeners' questions, then please do that as well. There might be quite a few things to discuss around listener questions next week, depending on the connotations of what happens this weekend, Joris. Have a brilliant week, everybody. You too, Joris.
Yeah, and you as well, hopefully.
Yes, thank you very much. And maybe, just maybe, depending on the way the world works, that we might be a triumvirate next week. We'll leave the door open for that and see what comes out of the mix. Thanks very much for listening, everybody. And we will speak to you very soon on another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast.